find. As I said, we review over 8,000 forms, and when I talk about reviewing those forms, it's actually a pretty significant process. The employees send their forms back to the ethics office. We review every one of those forms to make sure there's an original signature, et cetera. We log those forms. We scan them. We send an email receipt to every employee telling them that it's been received and that it's been forwarded to the Secretary of State. Then we forward all the documents to the Secretary of State. And in the last few days, we even drive those forms downtown to make sure that they make it on time so the employees are not penalized. The ethics training program, we have already designed the content and have sought approval for the 2011 training program. Now, because we are training abroad and a diverse population. We have training for Board of Trustees, for every new hire as they come into the university, for seasonal and temporary employees, and our medical residents. So these are a lot of our extra help employees, our student workers, it's a very transient population. We do classroom training sessions for about 3,000 of our employees who don't have access to a computer or may be a bit challenged in working through an online program. And then, of course, we have our faculty and staff online training program. We currently are under a cost-sharing contract with the other public universities. 2011 is the last year under that current contract, so soon we'll be revisiting that contract and we'll determine what's the most efficient and cost-effective method to continue for future years. I do anticipate that we'll continue sharing those costs and sharing the program. As far as revolving door, we talked about this last year. It was the new thing last year that had changed in the Ethics Act. We still work to coordinate with university administration to identify those employees within the university that are specifically impacted by the revolving door prohibitions because of their responsibilities at the university. We are required to provide this information to the governor's office and assist in the notification and education of those employees. And if an impacted employee chooses to leave state employment and seek other employment, they have a determination process that they are required to go through with the Office of Executive Inspector General. The Ethics Office is involved in that process because we have to do some, we have to research all the contracts that the individual has been involved in and provide a certification regarding their prior work activities. Okay. As I wrap up, now it's time to talk about university trustee compliance requirements. There are four main compliance requirements that impact trustees, and so I want to remind you of those. Each of you are required to complete a statement of economic interest form. You most likely received that in the mail last week. So you do have until May 2nd to respond. I would encourage you to do that later, so I don't have to, or earlier as opposed to later, so I don't have to drive your form downtown. The annual ethics training is completed by trustees. Our newest trustees have already completed their training. We provided them with their annual training, so they had immediate exposure to some of the state requirements. The remaining trustees, what I'd like to do is I'd like to hold off your training to the fall as we have done in the past. That will allow us time to incorporate any changes that may come about as a result of the current legislative session. Revolving door prohibitions do apply to trustees. Now, these only apply as you're leaving the Board of Trustees. But basically, in brief, if the university has executed a contract of over $25,000 with a particular business, you have restrictions regarding doing business with that same organization in the year following. So, and last, material communications and how those can affect trustees. It's easy job, right? I want to give you three.
They don't make it easy to be a trustee. Apparently, they don't make it easy to stop being a trustee.
Well, there certainly can be financial ramifications, right? I want to give you three examples because I think sometimes it's hard to think about how some of this legislation applies directly to the trustees. So I thought of three ways that I might be able to better communicate this. Let's say a potential vendor calls you, for some reason knows you, has a connection, and they have a conversation with you regarding an RFP. perhaps ask you to put in a good word for them or to let them know if there's a business opportunity at the university. Those communications could result in something that would need to be reported. We do have to look at everything on a case-by-case basis, but that would be one area where the light bulb might come on. Another example might be when you're interviewing top search firms, perhaps the top three respondents for a university administrator type of position. Interesting part about the reporting requirements is everyone in the room that is involved in that communication or that interview has to input a report. So if there are 10 individuals in the room, we're going to have 10 reports. So just thinking about that, you can think about how this impacts the university. When we're looking at A&E proposals, we have our top faculty or doctors evaluating equipment. You can see how this can compound into a very, very large expense and a large use of our time. Last example that I wanted to give is perhaps we have a very large construction project going on and you choose to sit in on an A&E presentation or such. That could result in you needing to input a procurement communication report. So I guess my word of warning is if you think you're in a situation where you might be having these types of communications, please do as we're advising everyone else, is call the ethics office. We'll talk about the situation, decide if you need to report, and if in fact it looks like you need to report, we'll help you establish an ID and walk you through that process. And just to give you an idea of the magnitude of this, I was recently working with a number of other individuals at the university, and we were simply trying to quantify the number of reports that might be made each year in this procurement reporting system and using a very average salary, which was probably kind of undercutting. But we very quickly came up with $1 million. That was simply the reporting time. That wasn't the decision, that wasn't the learning curve, that wasn't the time that it took for the communication, that was simply to input the report. So this is a very, very significant change for us.
Donna, can I ask a question?
Yes.
To your knowledge, has the Executive Inspector General had any investigations for violations of that provision yet?
As you know, unless an executive inspector general investigation has a direct violation of the Ethics Act, that report would not go public. And so I really cannot answer that question. I wouldn't have the background information. If I were to guess, I would say it's probably too early, considering this implementation date was just January 1. As far as the rulemaking authority, currently the rulemaking authority is with the Executive Ethics Commission, and as of today, we have no interpretive rules. We have nothing to help us, so we're hoping to see some rules go through the JCAR process that will give us a little bit more guidance regarding this. This actually concludes my presentation, but I would be happy to respond to any further questions you might have.
Questions, anyone? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That'll conclude our report, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Karen, I think you're up next. The report from Academic and Student Affairs.
The Academic and Student Affairs Committee met at 3 p.m. yesterday afternoon. Our committee welcomed our new trustees to our committee, Patricia Holmes and Rick Estrada, and we look forward to working with them in the future. The main item on our agenda was a wonderful presentation coordinated by Mina Rao on the multiple facets of teaching. And this turned out to be an excellent presentation. It was provided to us by several faculty members. Lynn Pardee spoke on teacher development, how we select teachers, how we cultivate and recognize teachers. Mina started out the presentation by talking about the multiple facets of teaching, how we teach